Chapter 1, The Act of Will, by Roberto Assagioli, MD, titled Introduction. If a man from a previous civilization, an ancient Greek, let us say, or a Roman, suddenly appeared among present-day humanity, his first impressions would probably lead him to regard it as a race of magicians and demigods. But were he a Plato or a Marcus Aurelius, and refused to be dazzled by the material wonders created by advanced technology, and were he to examine the human condition more carefully, his first impressions would give place to great dismay. He would soon notice that, though man has acquired an impressive degree of power over nature, his knowledge of and control over his inner being is very limited. He would perceive that this modern magician, capable of descending to the bottom of the ocean and projecting himself to the moon, is largely ignorant of what is going on in the depths of his unconscious, and is unable to reach up to the luminous superconscious levels and to become aware of his true self, capital S. This supposed demigod, controlling great electrical forces with the movement of a finger and flooding the air with sound and pictures for the entertainment of millions, would be seen to be incapable of dealing with his own emotions, impulses, and desires. As several writers, Toynbee among them, have pointed out, this wide gulf between man's external and inner powers is one of the most important and profound causes of the individual and collective evils which afflict our civilization and gravely menace its future. Man has had to pay dearly for his material achievements. His life has become richer, broader, and more stimulating, but at the same time, more complicated and exhausting. Its rapidly increasing tempo, the opportunities it offers for gratifying his desires, and the intricate economic and social machinery in which it has enmeshed him, make ever more insistent demands on his energy, his mental functions, his emotions, and his will. For convincing evidence of this, it would suffice to observe the day of the average businessman or politician or career woman or housewife. The individual often lacks the resources to cope with the difficulties and pitfalls of this kind of existence. His resistance may crumble in the face of the demands, the confusions, and the enticements it imposes. The ensuing disturbance leads to increasing discouragement and frustration, even to desperation. The remedy for these evils? The narrowing and eventual closing of the fatal gap between man's external and his inner powers. It has been and should be sought in two directions: the simplification of his outer life and the development of his inner powers. Let us examine in what ways and to what extent these two procedures can provide the needed remedies. The simplification of the external life. The trend towards simplicity began even before the rise and expansion of modern technology, as a reaction against the increasing complications and artificialities of civilized life. Its greatest exponents have been Jean-Jacques Rousseau, with his appeal for a return to nature, and Thoreau, who renounced the benefits of civilization and withdrew to lead a solitary, simple life, which he described so ably in Walden. Recently, disillusionment with the blessings of technological achievement has exploded into extreme and increasingly bitter indictments of the whole structure of modern civilization, into a wholesale rejection of our present way of life. Up to a certain point, the simplification of life is feasible and desirable. To some extent, everyone is able to resist the attractions of the world and pace of modern life, eliminate many unnecessary complications, re-establish closer contact with nature, and practice the art of relaxing and resting at intervals. But past a certain point, one encounters great difficulties. Duties of every kind, family ties, professional obligations, keep us bound to the wheel of modern life, and often compel us to conform to its hurried pace. But even if circumstances permitted a very high degree of simplification, and it were put into practice, the problem would only be partially solved. Modern man certainly could not, nor indeed has he reason to, abdicate from the predominant position and the consequent responsibility he has acquired on this planet. The evil does not lie in the technological powers themselves, but the uses to which man puts them, and the fact that he has allowed them to overwhelm and enslave him. Resistance to the prevailing negative trends of modern life calls for much determination, much firmness and persistence, much clear-sightedness and wisdom. But these are precisely the inequalities and powers in which modern man is sorely lacking. So we are led to the necessity of recourse to the second procedure, the development of man's inner powers. Only the development of his inner powers can offset the dangers inherent in man's losing control of the tremendous natural forces at his disposal and becoming the victim of his own achievements. A vivid realization that this is indispensable for maintaining the sanity and indeed the very survival of humanity, that only thus can man fulfill his true nature, should spur him on to tackle this task with an intensity of desire and determination equal to that which he has previously devoted to his external attainments. Fundamental among these inner powers, and the one to which priority should be given, is the tremendous, unrealized potency of man's own will. Its training and use constitute the foundation of all endeavors. There are two reasons for this. The first is the will's central position in man's personality, and its intimate connection with the core of his being, his very self. The second lies in the will's function in deciding what is to be done, in applying all the necessary means for its realization, and in persisting in the task in the face of all obstacles and difficulties. But when one decides to start this task, one is apt to be confused and baffled. A historical survey of the problems related to the will shows that attempts to solve this problem on theoretical, intellectualistic lines lead not only to no solution, but to contradiction, confusion, and bewilderment. Therefore, I believe that the right procedure is to postpone all intellectual discussions and theories on the subject and begin by discovering the reality and nature of the will through its direct, existential experience. And that's end of chapter 1, The Act of Will, by Roberto Assagioli, M.D.